Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Love the people through the change, and gradually over time, we began to grow a bit. And the first challenge that we faced in our growth was we didn't have enough space. So we didn't have enough space in seating or parking. We were on a very small plot of land, and the building that we were in was not easily expandable. At that time, we were in two services, and at the culture back in 1995-96 was not like it is today. There weren't as many churches doing 5 and 6 and 7 services on the campus. So we weren't thinking in those terms at that time. So for us, the question was really, should we build a bigger building or do we do something different from that? And my initial conclusion was, like a lot of people, we're going to build a bigger building. That's the way you grow. And so we began to search for solutions to that problem. Now, Pittsburgh is a very different place in terms of the topography than what you see here in California. It's rolling hills. There's very little flat pieces of property. Anything that you buy has to be very much developed. And there weren't a lot of big parcels of available land nearby to us. And so we prayed and researched and couldn't find any solutions to our challenge. And one particular fall day, I remember I was in my auditorium in the afternoon, and I was praying and I was asking God about this particular challenge. God, I don't understand why this is. How come you aren't opening the doors for us? This is really a hindrance to our ministry. What am I missing here? What do you want us to do about this? And I was really growing more and more frustrated with the lack of a solution. And it was during that interaction of prayer that I felt the Holy Spirit whisper something into my spirit that really changed me. It changed the direction of our ministry. After I had vented for a little while in prayer, I felt like the Holy Spirit said to me, okay, I hear you. You have a problem. And I don't know how to describe it. It wasn't like I heard an audible voice. It was just this settledness inside. You know, I get it. You have a problem. And I said, yeah, God, I do have a problem. I need you to help me with this, you know. And then I felt the Holy Spirit whisper this. Have you considered that I have problems too? And honestly, that set me back for a minute. Like, well, what do you mean? And so, God, you know, what problems do you have? What are you talking about here? Don't you own everything? Aren't you in charge of everything? You have all the power. I kind of just verbalized my thoughts out loud. And when I paused long enough, so I asked the question to God, God, what's your problem? What are you talking about here? What's the issues that you have that I'm not thinking about? And I felt very clear that the Holy Spirit said to me, my problem is that you live in a city that has a lot of towns and villages in it that don't have a good life-giving church. And Pittsburgh, just to give you a little bit of background, had an economic depression that hit in the 1970s because of the closing of the steel industries. And a lot of the towns up and down the rivers, there are three rivers in Pittsburgh, a lot of the towns up and down the rivers became very economically depressed because of that. A lot of people moved away, problems moved into these communities, many churches sat vacant, and we were in a suburban portion of Pittsburgh that was prospering, but not too far away from these villages that were suffering. And so I felt the Holy Spirit say to me, my problem is your city. You know, there's all these towns and villages that don't have a life-giving church. And here was the thought. If God saying to me, if I solve your problem and give you a bigger building with more space and you can fit more people into your church, that still doesn't solve my problem in that your city is still unreached. And so I felt the Holy Spirit say to me at that time, would you put my problem ahead of yours? Mm. Would you put my problem first? Would you put the reaching of your city ahead of the building of your church? And so we began strategically to launch a new church every year. This was, again, before I knew anything about multi-campusing. Okay, it was probably happening at the time, back in 96, 97, but it wasn't very visible at that moment. So the only thought that I had was to plant sovereign churches. So we started to do that. We planted our first in 96, sent our youth pastor, a group of people with him. He planted church number one. 1998, we planted our second. We recruited a guy in from the outside, sent a group of people, started church number two. We did that every year for 5 years. And in the process of all of that, the promise that God had given me on the day he said, would you put my problem ahead of yours, The promise that he gave me was the promise, Matthew 6:33, if you seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, all these other things will be added to you as well. In the process of planting our first five churches, property opened up to us. We were able to buy 30 acres of property right adjacent to us. We were able to raise the funds to begin the building process, and we launched into our own construction process to build a brand new building, which we now have been in for over 10 years. And what God has proved to me, I guess, in our journey is that, you know, it's not an either-or thing with God. It's not like either you plant churches or you grow your church. It's a both-and, that God's able to do both, because it's really not about just church planting. It's about reaching people, and since that's the agenda of heaven, we began to see people be reached both in our own congregation and the churches that we've been planting. And then as we continue to grow, we planted more. We planted a couple of more churches. Brian is actually one of our plants in the city of Pittsburgh, and we'll tell you his story in just a little bit. And then God has accelerated the process for us. And so we together are on a project right now. R2 Networks has set a goal to plant 100 churches in a 10-year period of time in the Northeast and beyond. And we started that journey in 2011 and have been well into it. And I'll let Brian give you the details of how things are progressing. But let me just go back to some of the root parts of multiplication before we get caught up in the numbers and the speed and the pathways of multiplication. I think it's good for us to get into the core issues of what it takes to multiply. Mm. One of the big things that I had to face when we planted our first church was the feeling of fear. Because the thought of planting a church and reaching a new community was really cool until the time came when people were going to leave. And at that point, sending people away to a different person's ministry became something that I really grappled with. So it was my youth pastor. He was a popular guy. He had been with me for 5 years. We said, okay, anybody that wants to go with Pat, that's his name. You know, you're welcome to go with Pat. And I made the mistake of the day that we had the launch day of having Pat preach. I say mistake, wasn't really a mistake, but it felt that way at the time. And Pat preached a great message, and at the end of that message I said, you know, some of you might not be on his launch team, but if you feel the Lord prompting you right now to go with Pat, be a part of this church plant, come up front right now, okay? And I had had a conversation with Pat about 2 months before, and I said, look, let me just talk about who you're recruiting here. I said, you can recruit anybody you want in the church, but here's my guidelines. I'd like you to tell me who you're recruiting ahead of time so I'm aware of it. And I said, second thing I want you to do is, there are two guys that I'm working with that are big givers here, and they're kind of leaders here, and I'd rather you not recruit these two guys. You kind of know where this is going, right? He said, no problem, man. You've been so generous. Thank you so much for your freedom to plant and recruit people. That's really great. And so these two guys, he had stayed away from them, and on the day I said, if any one of you wants to go with Pat, you can come up. And one of those two guys left his seat and walked to the front. And I remember the stunned feeling I had at that moment, because it was like, I wasn't mad at Pat. I wasn't mad at this guy. I was sort of mad at God. Like, God, here I am being generous. I mean, come on. How can this be? I'm giving away. I'm going to plant this church. This just isn't fair. This doesn't make sense. And I had all this going on inside my head while I'm leading in prayer for this new church, you know? So he gets to the front, we're standing there, and I again felt the Spirit of God speak to me to say this: if you're not going to give me your best, then why are you doing this? And I said, you're right, God. This isn't my church. These aren't my people. This is your agenda. This is your purpose. I can't hold on to anything. You know what? I sow him and whoever else you want to go, I release that. And I died in some ways to some things at that particular moment, and that death of wanting to hold on to things and instead choosing to release things, yeah, is, as a multiplying church, we're building a multiplying culture, is a death that you have to go through over and over and over and over again. In fact, if you're not willing to die to controlling your own church and your own environment, you'll never be able to multiply. Because if fear rules the day, if your thought is, if I don't manage this, how's this going to work out? If fear rules the day, fear quenches that necessary DNA component that multiplication comes from. And so we have to break it with death to self and faith that God is a more than enough God and that he can supply. And here's, I guess, as they say, the rest of the story. This guy that I wanted to hold on to, he ended up going with the First Church Plant, and he became their treasurer. He helped them get their finances in order, set them up strong, so I didn't have to worry about it. When we planted Church Plant number two, he left the first church and went to the second one, and he became their treasurer and got their finances set up so that I wouldn't have to worry about that. When we planted Church Plant number three, he left the second church and went to that third church plant and set their finances. So the Holy Spirit had an agenda in mind to help me that I could not have planned for myself. And I learned through that whole journey that you just have to trust him. You've got to release, and multiplication doesn't happen in any other way than that. And so it's you know, planting churches out of your church is this agonizingly wonderful thing. It's never easy. It's always painful, but it is a wonderful thing. And the more downline you get, the more impacting it is. So that's the introduction, I guess.
Thanks, Jeff. Isn't that an incredible story? I mean,
I want to go to this church.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, you talked about, well, first of all, a verse came to my mind as you were talking about, we cannot have a multiplication culture unless we're willing to die the death. And the verse came to my mind, as it probably did to yours, unless a seed goes into the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it can produce a harvest that's multiplied many times over. So, wow, thanks for just that teaching. But Jeff, you've gone through different fears along the way, and you've helped other pastors through some of those fears. What are two or three of those key fears that, in particular, that we have to face when we're in that moment of trying to decide, yeah, God, I want to help put your, I want to help solve your problem, put your problem ahead of mine. That was powerful. What are a couple of those fears?
Yeah, so the fears that I face, I think, are the same fears that most pastors face, whether you are multiplying or not. So these are the things that lead pastors tend to think. Will there be people who want to come to my church? that's the one. Like, are we growing? How come we're not growing? Why aren't we growing faster? Because this is often the identity issue that we face. We often will tie our identity to the size and speed. We know we shouldn't. We know we're not supposed to. But there often is this tendency that lead pastors have to tie their identity to how fast and how big their church is. Well, church planting goes counter to those two things. It feels like if I'm going to send people out, then this is going to diminish me. I will have less speed and growth and less people to depend on. So that's the first fear. Then the second fear is I'm going to lose money. It's going to make a lot of problems more complicated, not less. So I'm going to have less people, and I'm going to have less money, and that's going to make everything tighter and more difficult. So this is where I know a lot of friends of mine, when they go to pull the trigger on planting a church, they have this choke moment to say, well, but right now we have this initiative made. As soon as we pay this off, then we'll go ahead and do it. And there's always, now, there is a balance between, you have to be healthy enough to be able to reproduce. If you're not healthy, it's totally okay to pay attention to being healthy first. If we had planted too soon, we weren't really all that healthy in the first 5 years of my ministry there. We had to get healthy first. But when you're healthy, if you always look at the reason, you know, what does it says in Ecclesiastes? He who looks at the clouds won't plant, and he who measures the wind. So this idea, if you tend to always look around and say, well, there's some reason why we can't, then you'll always find a reason not to. And so this is where faith comes in. Faith says, I believe that if I give it away, God will multiply it back. I don't know how it's going to work, but I believe that somehow, since God's in charge, he's going to take care of it. And so it's the loss of people, and it's the loss of finances. And then I think the third one, and I'll just be very vulnerable with this, it's the loss of status. So we tend to measure status by size.
Yeah.
So the feeling is, well, I'm really going to slow down my growth, and if my church isn't bigger, then what does this mean? So I plant a lot of churches, and I've done everything I can do to break that mindset, but I still struggle with the status thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I still look out on certain days and look around and say, where is everybody at? And why isn't people, why aren't people here yet? And, you know, what does this mean about me as a leader? Because especially in our culture, we've made size this huge factor. Probably we should be thinking in terms of reproduction being something we should be shooting for more than just the size of our ministry. But, and I think we're moving in that direction, okay? But we're still in that place where that's another thing that everybody faces. Whether you're multiplying or not, those are things everybody fears everybody has to confront. The benefit of planting is once you give people away willingly, then you're not as afraid when people just leave on their own. Use the loss. Like, yeah, lost people before.
That's great. It's gonna be fine. Brian, you were there. When did you come, and what have your observations been as you watch this process going on? Did you learn from that, and how did that affect and influence you?
Well, I learned a lot from Pastor Jeff. He became a mentor in my life. I was the sixth church plant out of Allison Park. And so Jeff planted the first five, and then I came right after that, so I was number six. And
how long were you there before you planted?
About 9 months, a year, something like that. So I was on staff, and I loved this church so much I didn't even want to plant a church. I was like, man, I love this church. We got Starbucks coffee every Sunday. I was like, this is the best thing going. So, but yeah, I mean, it was, I learned so much from, Pastor Jeff lives an open-handed life. And I learned that principle early on. And he told me, I'll never forget the day, he said, you can take anybody you want from his church. And he said, you can take anybody from my church and, you know, they can go with you, be part of your team. And I targeted the big givers. I went right for them.
He still does, actually.
But he's very open-handed. And that's something we've instilled in just the network I oversee now, is to have an open-handed mentality. And so we have across our network, we always say this, if someone in one of our churches have it and you're planting, you can have it. And, you know, there's proper process of going through the right steps, but we live our lives that way. So, and I can briefly go into my story now if you want me to.
Now, why don't you save a little of it?
Okay.
Yeah, I think that radical generosity is a principle in church planting. You can't get around. And maybe Jesus was telling the truth when he said it's more blessed to give than to receive. And there's a blessing that comes through that releases, I think, this stream of provision that can't be released any other way. But Jeff, you were in a church that had been trying to add and grow, and then your vision became, okay, now we're going to multiply. At first, it was driven somewhat by the realities that you were facing in terms of the size of your facility. But what did you do to begin to change the mindset of your key leaders? How did you begin to instill what you were feeling? I mean, you had this powerful moment with God, but they didn't. How did you begin to change that culture?
So I don't know what it's like in other places. I've been in Pittsburgh my whole life. So I grew up there. I pastored there pretty much the entire time I've been in ministry. I never got any resistance from my people about the idea of planting. In fact, some of the folks that were attending my church lived in some of these villages along the river, and they would drive 20 to 30 minutes to come to my church. So when we started to talk about planting a church in their community, they were immediately thrilled. In fact, some of them had already been praying that way. So when we started to move in that direction and they began to see people being reached in these towns, they were more pushing me. When are we going to do the next one? When are we going to do the next one? So I never had a pushback from my people. Now, I did get some pushback from my staff after plant number three, because we had drained our teams of all of our leaders. So we had sent away our bass player and our guitar player, and we had sent away, you know, children's workers, and they were coming to be like, hey, you can't keep doing this to us. Like, we're trying to replace, and as soon as we get them replaced, they end up going someplace else. What are we supposed to do? And that caused us to have new conversations, which was, how do we create pipelines in these ministries so that we don't keep, we can't wait until we plant to find a replacement. We have to be a little bit in advance to that. So there was a little pushback from the staff point of view, but my church has never, I have never had a resistance to the idea of planting. Now, I know there are some places in the country where there's been a bad planting story somewhere nearby, or maybe a church that tried it and failed, and you have something to overcome with that, or maybe there's been a split, you know, at some time in the past or nearby, and so there might be a cultural thing you have to work through. If that were the case, I would say what you need to do is just like you do with anything else in leading change. You need to have a clear vision. You need to know why you're doing it. And then you need to understand what people's objections are and work your way through them, just like you would in leading change in any other area of your church, to get people to take the step to expand. And this is often a wrestling that I think happens in various parts of the country. But the less church you are where you pastor, the more people are thrilled with the idea of planting. The more churches there are around you, the more of a resistance I think there can be. And we just happen to live in a part of the country, I guess like those of you who live around here, where you can plant churches all over the place, and it's totally fine because there's far more population than there are churches that are out there.
You know, you mentioned bad stories. Do you have any bad stories? Did you make any mistakes that when you think about it, you're like, man, looking back, I would have done this. I would have changed this. This one didn't go well. And why didn't it go well? And out of some any pain along way, or has it all just been perfect and we should bow down? Yeah. And
how much time do you have? I guess you can take the rest of the time with this, right? So I could give you a list. Things that I learned from. One, after number three, I realized if you're going to plant out of your church and send staff away, it's best to replace your staff before you send them. Because I just about burned myself out because I was basically doing three jobs, coaching the planter, pastoring my church, and then doing their job that I had just vacated because I sent them away to plant while I tried to figure out who was going to take their place. So after the third time of doing that, I realized I should probably hire someone first, have the planter train them, then send them out. That was a huge learning curve for me and affected me personally. Second thing that we learned early on, and this is probably pretty well known now, I think a lot of church planting organizations teach these principles, and that is when you plant a church, you need more than a planter, you need a team. So the first couple of times, we just sent the planter, let him recruit, but now we realize that you need to have competent people in various positions, you know, a worship person, a children's person, a media person, a planter himself, someone to do admin. You know, there has to be people, not necessarily paid most of the time. Very few people are paid, but at least they're identified as competent people who are operating as a team from the very beginning, because that really saves a lot of things. Third thing, and this might seem to be a bit unusual, and I know Brian could probably echo this, is it is very important to know that the person you're planning with is teachable before you get too far down the road. Because somebody that won't listen is going to have problems or going to cause problems. So a lot of times early in the journey, I do a purposeful test of character. I'll make an unreasonable assignment or bring some type of very direct correction just to find out when they get punched in the face, so to speak, how do they respond? You know, and then watching a response when somebody comes back and says, no, you're right, I'll do whatever you say, it's not so much I'm on a power trip as I want to know this person can receive correction. The second plant that we did, I had a guy who didn't like to receive correction. He and I were fine together. But the problem was when he got into his own church, he couldn't receive even advice from the people in his church. So he was a great speaker and a really good gatherer, and he'd bring a lot of people in, and then they'd be there a couple months, and they'd have a run-in with him, and they would be gone. So his numbers stayed really low because he wasn't competent on the front-end skills, but because he couldn't handle criticism. And after a little while, he got depressed. And I probably could have seen that ahead of time had I just tested that part of his character. He was unfamiliar to me, so when we planted with him, I didn't know that he had this, what I'll call a flaw in his character that was a stopper for his journey. So testing teachability and then other characteristics. I mean, we could go down the road of other character qualities. You can also kind of see that if a guy can't gather. So one of the things, I think church plant number 7, right after Brian, I had a guy that wanted to plant who had never really proven himself. And he was on staff, but he couldn't really ever grow anything. He could only maintain it. And so when he came and said, I want to plant, I said, I'm not sure you can do this. But if you on your own go into this new community over here and you can get 35 people in a room on a regular basis, then I'll know that you could gather. And he took it as a challenge and managed to do that. So what I thought was a stopper skill, actually he grew the competence because he was faced with a challenge. So, I mean, church planters have to be gatherers. If there's one skill besides, I guess, humility and teachability you have to have, is you've got to be able to get people in a room, yeah. Because no one will do that for you. So you could be a really great guy, maybe a great pastor who's competent in pastoring a pre-existing church, but not have the skills to plant the church because you just aren't a good gatherer. So I think testing those competencies ahead of time really helps. So those are, I guess, not all agonizingly painful, but lessons learned anyway.
Absolutely. And Brian, you survived the punch in the face. I just
I still get punched in the face. Yeah, but Jeff's right. You know, if someone's not teachable, it's better to find it out early on in the planting process than some of the worst things I've ever had to go through is dealing with the planter. It's not teachable, not humble, not willing to take correction. And especially when they think they know what they're doing, and they've never done it before. And but you have that moments early on, it's so much easier. And then too, once they do, as we call, receive the punch in the face and respond and say, hey, I'm willing to learn, help me do this. I want to grow a church. I want to launch this strong. I want to do this the best. I want to build the best team I can. It's great. And best way to do it.
So, Brian, did you come to Allison Park wanting to plant, or did you catch that vision once you were there? And what was it about the culture that that made you say, hey, I want to plant, and I want to plant through Allison Park?
Yeah, well, I was actually in Bible school in Pennsylvania, and a friend of Jeff's, who was the pastor that was kind of overseeing the Bible school, we went out to Pittsburgh one day, and I felt a call to plant from a place called Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, into Pittsburgh. So it's about 4 hours away. So we drove in, and I was just going to have this pastor from Gettysburg launch me out to plant in the city there. He said, why don't we meet with this guy, Jeff Leake? And he said, you ever heard of him? I said, never heard of him. And so we went to Max and Irma's, and we had a holy moment over a garbage burger. And I just began to share my story with Jeff, and he began to cry, and I explained to him what I wanted to do. And it was a moment that was God. And then I moved out probably a month later, and he brought me on his staff, and I give him so much. I'm so grateful for Jeff Leake. You know, they were in the middle of a building project, and a big one, and he brought me in and invested in me and punched me in the face a lot. it was a great, great time. And the culture there was amazing. And it's probably even stronger now, but it's Jeff had a culture of multiplying, sending people, raising up leaders, and to reach the lost. There was such a culture at Allison Park to reach lost people, and I just loved it. So, I mean, we've always taken the tagline that was at Allison Park to reach the one, and so we say with our network, we just copied off them, to reach the one that's far from God. So it's all about that one person that's far from God. So everything we do filters on reaching that one person. And I learned that from Jeff.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, because we can talk about multiplication, but the heartbeat of multiplication is that desire to see lost people found.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned that you came in and there was a culture of multiplication there that was strong. For the average person, Jeff, how did you keep this vision of multiplication in front of your church, you know, just kind of a week in, week out? Sure, on the day you plant and, you know, and prayed over the person, it was very obvious, but What were some of the things that you did and still do to reinforce that vision of multiplication? How would they hear it on a week-by-week kind of basis so that it really begins to permeate the culture versus be just another thing that you do as you're doing all the other church stuff?
Yeah, so probably it really centers around, for us, the giving campaign that we do. So after we finish the giving campaign, it was a three-year campaign to build our building. We continue to have a campaign every year. I watched how the campaign was really healthy for my church. They learned to stretch. They learned to operate in faith because they had to pray through what their finances were like. So we transitioned our building campaign and made it an annual missions campaign instead. And so every year we would present a list of projects, and church planting was one of those. The people could give over and above their tithes to whatever project they chose to give to, and be able to designate their giving towards whether it was water wells or ministries dealing with human trafficking or orphanages or church planting. So we raised all the money for helping our churches get started through those giving campaigns. So what we would do is during the offering moments, we would just talk about updates. Here's what your giving is going to do. This is Pastor Brian. Hey, they're getting ready to have their first launch team Bible study coming up here in Lawrenceville, downtown Pittsburgh. So be praying for them and just know that your giving is going to make this possible. And then when a good story would come up about somebody whose life was impacted there, we would say, hey, just want to tell you about Joe, and here's what happened in Joe's life, and this is what your giving is going to do. Keep on praying for Pastor Brian. And then the launch day would happen, and we highlight that a couple of weeks ahead of time, the day of launch, and a couple of weeks after, so that people are sharing the whole idea of that. Now we take it to the next level, because over the past couple of years with social media, now we just tell stories constantly on social media. So for us, we have a lot of stats that we can share, like here was the cluster of plants that we just planted. But really, what makes people attracted to reproduction is when they hear a story of someone's life who has changed. So I think the key of engaging people in the vision for reproduction is you've got to bring it down to the one. That one person who wouldn't be saved, that one person who got set free from drugs, that one person whose life or family has been made different. And this is, I guess, not all that different from just casting vision for our own ministries. I mean, this is what makes people stay engaged with the ministries of your own local church, is when you tell stories that reinforce the vision. But I think that's really a key thing. People give, people pray, and they hear the stories of life change.
That's great. Well, we want to open it up to you for your questions, especially for Jeff, but for Brian and myself as well to engage with. But the idea in these forums is not to be a workshop where we're just presenting information, but where we actually interact with you all, interact with one another, but then hear your questions and your comments. And so what are some questions or thoughts that you're having as you listen to Jeff and this amazing story and some of the principles that he shared? Yes?
You mentioned about a church planter has to be a person who's a gatherer. Can you expound on that? Do you mean, is it a personality thing that you're a good communicator, or is it more of you're a person who's good in building relationships? And can you expound on that?
And could you repeat the question?
Yeah, so the question was, we talked about how a church planter, one of the skills they have to do is they have to be a gatherer. What's involved with that? Is that good communication skills, good relational skills? I think it's probably a little bit of both of those things, but I've actually met people who aren't great preachers who are good gatherers. So, for instance, we're also a multi-campus church. Okay, so we have three campuses as well as the church planting that we do. When we started our campus, we started with our best small group leader couple. And this guy, because we do video venue at the other two campuses, this guy who is our campus pastor is not necessarily the most fantastic communicator ever. But he and his wife together, they just are people magnets. So when they had small groups, they always had 35 people in their small groups. And we would say, you're going to have to multiply this group. And they would say, well, we don't want to leave them, you know, because they had the ability to make people feel welcome, to make people feel connected, to get some hospitality going. People were having fun. So I think that's the thing. You probably have some great gatherers in your ministry that are leading small groups or areas of ministry that they may not necessarily be great preachers, but they're just good gatherers. Now, it's a bonus if you get both, of course, but gathering is a very specifically unique skill, if that makes sense. Sure.
Financially, how do you handle a church plant? How do you do that? And number two, how large was your church when you did your first plant?
Okay, so the two questions are, how large were we when we planted our first? And then secondly, how do we handle it financially? We were about 1,000 the first time we planted. So we were at a place where we could really handle it. At the moment, we didn't have any debt either. So at that point, our first church, we were debt-free as a church because we were in a pre-existing building. And we had plenty of people, I guess, to give at that moment. How we do financially is we build, with the church planner, a budget. Typically, it's anywhere between $75,000 and $300,000, depending upon where they're planting. There are some parts of the country it's going to be a lot more than others. Some of the plants that Brian does are urban plants, and they're in places that are very, very poor where facilities are easier to get. In other places, we plant in very wealthy communities where renting a facility might cost a lot more. So we build a budget. Then we build a pathway to achieve the budget. Typically, it involves some type of matching money from one of the church planting organizations. Now, when we first start planting, there was no such thing as matching money. So we raised all of it ourselves some way. But now, there's a lot of denominations and church planting organizations that offer you matching funds that you can get a no-interest loan and pay the money back. So for us, we work with two, Church Multiplication Network and the ARC, Association of Related Churches primarily, where you can get between $30,000 and $50,000 of money that you'll have to pay back over the life of the new church. So that's a big chunk. Then what we do, so for the church that my church plant, we actually raise, so in order for, let's say, let's go the ARC route. In order for a church planter to get $50,000 of no-interest loan from the ARC, they have to raise an additional $50,000 to prove that they have the capacity to raise money. We will, as a church, give at least $30,000 and sometimes up to $50,000 to that planter so that they can come up with the free money to go with the payback money. So if we give $50,000 and they get $50,000 in matching funds, now they're at $100,000. Many times they have to raise more than that. So then we train them. Here's how you raise money, okay? Build your list of everybody you've ever met. Begin to talk to them about finances. So we can send them out, do some training so that they can raise the additional capital so that they have enough. But when we go into it, we tell them, this is how much we're going to give you, and we are not going to go beyond that. You will be responsible for the rest of the money that you have to raise. And our strategy is also based upon the concept that on the first day of your church, you'll be large enough to be able to be sustainable. So we put a lot into the grand opening moment, do a lot of underground work so that when they get to that first day, they have enough people to be sustainable by week two. Now, in many cases, sustainable looks different. So some pastors go into it, no, sustainable means I'm going to work and also pastor, okay? So we have some bivocational situations, or some might know I'll be part-time for the church and I'm also going to have an additional job. And in many cases, it's, I'm going to launch this large enough that I'll be able to be full-time as the pastor from the very beginning. But we are negotiating and coaching each planter to define their financial expectations. Another thing that I learned, I guess a mistake that I picked up on, is it is best to define expectations in writing ahead of time with everybody you work with, especially the planter. Because the planter will always feel like they didn't get enough, and the parent church will always feel like I gave you more than you deserved. And so if you define it ahead of time and you say, here's a memorandum of understanding, this is what we're going to do, this is what you're going to do, let's sign our names at the bottom. That really helps. It doesn't eliminate it altogether. Yeah. I can tell you, I had one guy came back, and he said, how come you guys aren't giving me more money? And I said, didn't you read the memorandum of understanding you signed? He said, no, I didn't read it. I said, you should have read it before you signed it, because this is where we are, my man. There's no more money coming.
Punch so, in the face.
So, but there is, it's amazing how sometimes people get so scared of me that they don't even hear you. Like, they know what you're saying, but they're so panicked about it, they don't even hear you. So you need to have the conversation over and over and over and over again so they understand what they're responsible for, what you're going to do, because that's where hurt feelings come. people were like, you know, they sent me out, they never backed me up at all. So they need to know what to expect from the very beginning. But you don't have to be 1,000 to plant. Brian's network has proven you can actually plant at a much smaller size, especially if you're in a network of other churches that are helping you to be able to reproduce.
Yeah. Well, I wish I was taking notes instead of setting up here. Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to raise my hand. You're reading my mind. When did you decide to do multi-site your own church at the same time you're planting these other churches, and why did you make that decision?
Yeah, very good question. Yeah. So I had always wondered what multi-site was like, honestly, because I would always get asked the question, why did you plant all these churches in your city? Why weren't you just multi-campus? And I would always respond, because I didn't know there was a thing called multi-site until we were already doing our thing. So I always had an interest in it, and I do a lot of events like this where I'm talking about multiplication, and I thought, you know, I really should get some skin in the game with this multi-campus thing and figure out what it's like, what the differences are. And so rather than planting our next church in Pittsburgh, we did a campus. And in that whole process, learned a whole bunch of stuff about what campuses are versus church plants. And then what happened was one of our churches, actually the second one we planted, had gone through several pastoral transitions, and they asked, could we now cease being a church and be adopted back and become a campus? So now we have these two other venues besides our first one. And it has provided for me a tremendous amount of learning about church planting versus campusing, because there are a lot of differences and a lot of pros and cons with that. So, I mean, I can go into that at some point, but that's part of why we went on that journey. Yeah.
I would be interested in hearing the difference between multi-site.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, go ahead.
Very quickly, campuses are more expensive because you tend to be interested in reproducing yourself down to the detail. So you put a lot more money in, okay? Campuses are more complicated because they always affect everything. So it's not like once you plant a campus, they're just a campus. They affect how you talk about everything. They affect about what goes in your bulletin every week. They affect how you record a video. They affect how you do meetings and mission trips. And it's just now you're in two different places, and you've got to think about now how to do things in two or three different locations. So they're much more complicated. And three, the biggest difference between a campus and a church plant is the word control. When you give away a church, you lose control. When you keep a campus, you maintain control. So the question is that a good thing or a bad thing for you? Because if you maintain control, then you get to keep all of their problems. And all of their problems remain yours. If you give up control, then you just have a brother with a bunch of problems.
And they're still your problems.
Yeah, so you love him, but it's not up to you to solve it if it's a church plant, right? So a campus, you keep it all. Yep. Now, I say if you like to do management, you'll like campuses.
Yeah.
If you do not like management, campuses are a management nightmare because it's diversified, multi-geographical, geography locations. It's thinking in many different ways. It's a lot of management. So people who like management and control will like campuses. People who don't, you should just plant churches, because you'll frustrate yourself, especially the more of them that you collect. You know, it's like being a parent. You know, the first one is great, and the second one's great, and then if you have five kids, eventually you get outnumbered, and it becomes more complicated. You have to have a system to keep everybody together. So that's a quick overview.
I'm laughing because I'm writing both the pain and the joy of a multi-site, and it's like, thank you.
Well, I will
you
add,
should, because you should just play that, put that on repeat and play that two or three times when you're thinking about it.
I will add, this is the one thing. In most cases, campuses grow faster and larger than church plants do. That's the other side of it. So with control comes, but they typically grow faster and stay larger, unless you get this exceptional church planter guy that has these really strong leadership gifts that can drive things on. So our campuses pick up much more speed than our church plants do. So
is that growth in transfer or growth in new people coming to Christ?
That's a good question. I don't think I have the data for that. I don't think it's a whole lot different from a church plant. I think it's basically the same. The reason why I hesitated is the campus that came back to us is still in transition. So they're not really adding that many people. We're just trying to reinvent their culture. But the other one, I think it's probably reaching new people just like the church plans have been. We sent some people over from our one campus, but. And I think the reason that is because you just care so deeply about a campus. You're staffing it all the time, and you're putting the energy behind it all the time, and a church plant just doesn't have that unless it's coming out of the heart and life of the leader, you know? Yeah.
With the decision to, in a particular area, go multi-site, say, versus church plant, is that based upon distance from the main campus? Was it based upon difference in culture of the people? What were some of the factors?
I don't think I had it all worked out like that. For us, it was enough of a distance away. That was one factor. It was in an area that wasn't really reached by a life-giving church. That was another factor. And we just decided to do a campus rather than a plant. In the past, we would have just planted a church there. So there wasn't a real rhyme or reason for us on that one.
Yeah, one more question, then we're going to take a break and start session two after that. One more question? Yeah.
When you are investing in the staff or the future prospects and people that you're going to be seeing out, how do the people who are staying on your staff, how do they manage that when you put all the effort and energy into these new people, these new plans, versus maintaining what you actually got here as well?
Yeah, I don't think there was a resentment about it at all. They were all excited about kind of giving birth together, so they all shared in the vision of it. So my tech guys wanted to train the new tech guys, and the worship leader was really interested in helping that new worship person get started. So they all saw it as their project. Eventually, we started planting enough to where I had to get really thoughtful about the division of responsibilities. So I eventually added an executive pastor who works basically running the day-to-day functions of Allison Park Church, so that I, because my gifting is really the entrepreneurial, apostolic kind of part of sending people out, my church has allowed me to focus my energies on the expansion of this thing, and we hired a very competent guy who basically manages the team at Allison Park Church, and those two things working together makes that possible. Originally, I kind of did both, which again, just really was tiring on me, so eventually learning how to delegate some things was important.
Yeah, and I think we could press into that one a little bit more because we're talking, one of the things we're talking about is tensions that come with igniting a multiplication culture. And what Jeff has just said is one of those that come along the way as you begin to do the apostolic thing, and the people in the existing church are like, okay. But Jeff has done it really, really well. You'll get more of the failures and mistakes from my story in a little bit. But really, Jeff, that's fantastic what you've shared. And so we're going to take about 10 minutes, and then Brian's going to be on and share his amazing story that God is just unfolding through him. So take a break, meet some folks you don't know, and we'll be back together in 10.